Part 3 Section 11 Replacement of the Fixed Capital. In the analysis of the exchanges of the annual reproduction, the following presents great difficulty. If we take the simplest form in which the matter may be presented, where C equals constant capital, V equals variable capital, and S equals surplus value, we get Department 1, 4,000 C, plus 1,000 V, plus 1,000 S, plus Department 2, 2,000 C, plus 500 V, plus 500 S, equals 9,000. This resolves itself finally into 6,000 C, plus 1,500 V, plus 1,500 S, equals 9,000. One portion of the value of the constant capital, which consists of instruments of labour in the strict meaning of the term, as a distinct section of the means of production, is transferred from the instruments of labour to the product of labour, the commodity. These instruments of labour continue to function as elements of the productive capital, doing so in their old bodily form. It is their wear and tear, the depreciation gradually experienced by them during their continual functioning for a definite period, which reappears as an element of value of the commodities produced by means of them, which is transferred from the instrument of labour to the product of labour. With regard to the annual reproduction, therefore, only such component parts of fixed capital will from the first be given consideration as last longer than a year. If they are completely worn out within the year, they must be completely replaced and renewed by the annual reproduction, and the point at issue does not concern them at all. It may happen in the case of machines and other more durable forms of fixed capital, and it frequently does happen, that certain parts of them must be replaced, lock, stock, and barrel within 1 year, although the building or machine in its entirety lasts much longer. These parts belong in one category with the elements of fixed capital, which are to be replaced within 1 year. This element of the value of commodities must not be confused with the costs of repair. If a commodity is sold, this value element is turned into money the same as all others. But after it has been turned into money, its difference from the other elements of value becomes apparent. The raw and auxiliary materials consumed in the production of commodities must be replaced in kind in order that the reproduction of commodities may begin, or that the process of production of commodities in general may be continuous. The labour power spent on them must also be renewed by fresh labour power. Consequently, the money realised on the commodities must be continually reconverted into these elements of the productive capital, from the money form into the commodity form. It does not alter the matter if raw and auxiliary materials, for instance, are bought at certain intervals in larger quantities, so that they constitute productive supplies, and need not be bought anew during certain periods. And therefore, as long as they last, the money coming in through the sale of commodities, inasmuch as it is meant for this purpose, may accumulate, and this portion of constant capital thus appears temporarily as money capital, whose active function has been suspended. It is not a revenue capital. It is productive capital suspended in the form of money. The renewal of the means of production must go on all the time, although the form of this renewal, with reference to the circulation, may vary. The new purchases, the circulation operation by which they are renewed or replaced, may take place at more or less prolonged intervals. Then a large amount may be invested at one stroke, compensated by a corresponding productive supply. or the intervals between purchases may be small. Then follows a rapid succession of money expenditures in small doses, of small productive supplies. This does not alter the matter itself. The same applies to labour power. Where production is carried on continuously throughout the year on the same scale, continuous replacement of consumed labour power by new. Where work is seasonable, or different portions of labour are applied at different periods, as in agriculture, corresponding purchases of labour power, now in small, now in large amounts. But the money proceeds, realised from the sale of commodities, so far as they turn into money that part of the commodity value which is equal to the wear and tear of fixed capital, are not reconverted into that component part of the productive capital whose diminution in value they cover. They settle down beside the productive capital and persist in the form of money. This precipitation of money is repeated until a period of reproduction consisting of great or small numbers of years has elapsed, during which the fixed element of constant capital continues to function in the process of production in its old bodily form. As soon as the fixed element, such as buildings, machinery, etc., has been worn out and can no longer function in the process of production, its value exists alongside it, fully replaced by money, by the sum of money precipitations, the values which had been gradually transferred from the fixed capital to the commodities in whose production it participated, and which had assumed the form of money as a result of the sale of these commodities. This money then serves to replace the fixed capital, or its elements, since its various elements have different durabilities, in kind, and thus really to renew this component part of the productive capital. This money is therefore the money form of a part of the constant capital value, namely of its fixed part. The formation of this hoard is thus itself an element of the capitalist process of reproduction. It is the reproduction and storing up, in the form of money, of the value of fixed capital, or its several elements, until the fixed capital has ceased to live, and in consequence has given off its full value to the commodities produced, and must now be replaced in kind. But this money loses only its form of a hoard, and hence resumes its activity in the process of reproduction of capital brought about by the circulation, as soon as it is reconverted into new elements of fixed capital to replace those that died off. Just as simple commodity circulation is in no way identical with a bare exchange of products, the conversion of the annual commodity product can in no way resolve itself into a mere unmediated mutual exchange of its various components. Money plays a specific role in it, which finds expression particularly in the manner in which the value of the fixed capital is reproduced. How different the matter would present itself if production were collective and no longer possessed the form of commodity production is left to a later analysis. Should we now return to our fundamental scheme, we shall get the following for Department 2. 2000C plus 500V plus 500S. All the articles of consumption produced in the course of the year are in that case equal in value to 3000, and every one of the different commodity elements in the total sum of the commodities is composed, so far as its value is concerned, of 2/3 C plus 1/6 V plus 1/6 S, or in percentages, 66 2/3 C plus 16 2/3 V plus 16 2/3 S. The various kinds of commodities of Department 2 may contain different proportions of constant capital. Likewise, the fixed portion of the constant capital may be different. The duration of the parts of the fixed capital, and hence the annual wear and tear, or that portion of value which they transfer pro rata to the commodities in the production of which they participate, may also differ. But that is immaterial here. As to the process of social reproduction, it is only a question of exchange between departments 2 and 1. These two classes here confront each other only in their social mass relations. Therefore, the proportional magnitude of the constant capital of the value of commodity product 2, the only one of consequence in the question now being discussed, gives the average proportion if all the branches of production classed under Department 2 are embraced. Every kind of commodity, and they are largely the same kinds, whose aggregate value is classed under 2000C plus 500V plus 500S, is therefore equal in value to 66 2/3% C plus 16 2/3% V plus 16 2/3% S. This applies to every 100 of the commodities, whether classed under C, V, or S. The commodities in which the 2000C are incorporated may be further divided in value into 1,333 1/3 C, plus 333 1/3 V, plus 333 1/3 S, equals 2000C. Similarly, 500V may be divided into 333 1/3 C, plus 83 1/3 V, plus 83 1/3 S, equals 500V. And finally, 500S may be divided into 333 1/3 C, plus 83 1/3 V, plus 83 1/3 S, equals 500S. Now, if we add the three constant capitals, we get 1,333 1/3 C, plus 333 1/3 C, plus 333 1/3 C, equals 2,000. Furthermore, 333 1/3 V, plus 83 1/3 V, plus 83 1/3 V, equals 500. And the same in the case of S. The addition gives the same total value of 3,000. The entire constant capital value contained in the commodity mass of Department 2, representing a value of 3,000, is therefore comprised in 2,000C, and neither 500V nor 500S hold an atom of it. The same is true of V and S, respectively. In other words, the entire share of the commodity mass of Department 2 that represents constant capital value, and therefore is reconvertible either into its bodily or its money form, exists in 2,000 constant capital. Everything referring to the exchange of the constant value of commodities 2 is therefore confined to the movement of 2,000 constant capital of Department 2. And this exchange can be made only with 1,000 variable plus 1,000 surplus value of Department 1. Similarly, as regards Department 1, everything that bears in the exchange of the constant capital value of that class is to be confined to a consideration of 4,000 constant capital of Department 1. Section 11A. Replacement of the wear and tear portion of the value in the form of money. Now, if to start with we take the scheme Department 1, 4,000C plus 1,000V plus 1,000S, and Department 2, 2000C plus 500V plus 500S. The exchange of the commodities 2000 Department 2 Constant Capital for commodities of the same value, Department 1 1000 Variable Capital plus 1000 Surplus Value, would presuppose that the entire 2000 Constant Capital of Department 2 are reconverted in kind into the natural elements of the constant capital of 2, produced by Department 1. But the commodity value of 2000, in which the latter exists, contains an element making good the depreciation in value of the fixed capital, which is not to be replaced immediately in kind, but converted into money, which gradually accumulates into a sum total until the time for the renewal of the fixed capital in its bodily form arrives. Every year registers the demise of fixed capital, which must be replaced in this or that individual business, or in this or that branch of industry. In the case of one and the same individual capital, this or that portion of its fixed capital must be replaced, since its different parts have different durabilities. On examining annual reproduction, even on a simple scale, that is, disregarding all accumulation, we do not begin ab ovo from the very beginning. The year which we study is one in the course of many. It is not the first year after the birth of capitalist production. The various capitals invested in the manifold lines of production of Department 2, therefore, differ in age, just as people functioning in these lines of production die annually, so a host of fixed capitals expire annually and must be renewed in kind out of the accumulated money fund. Therefore, the exchange of 2000 Department 2 constant capital for 2000 Department 1 variable capital plus surplus value includes a conversion of 2000 Department 2 constant capital from its commodity form, articles of consumption, into natural elements which consist not only of raw and auxiliary materials, but also of natural elements of fixed capital, such as machinery, tools, buildings, etc. The wear and tear, which must be replaced in money, in the value of 2000 Department 2 constant capital, therefore, by no means corresponds to the amount of the functioning fixed capital, since a portion of this must be replaced in kind every year. But this assumes that the money necessary for this replacement was accumulated in former years by the capitalists of Department 2. However, that very condition holds good in the same measure for the current year as for the preceding ones. In the exchange between Department 1, 1000 variable capital plus 1000 surplus value, and 2000 Department 2 constant capital, it must be first noted that the sum of values, Department 1 variable capital plus surplus value, does not contain any constant element of value, hence also no element of value to replace wear and tear, that is, value that has been transmitted from the fixed component of the constant capital to the commodities in whose bodily form V plus S exist. On the other hand, this element exists in Department 2 constant capital, and it is precisely a part of this value element that owes its existence to fixed capital, which is not to be converted immediately from the money form into its bodily form, but has first to persist in the form of money. The exchange between Department 1, 1000V plus 1000S, and 2000 Department 2 constant capital, therefore, at once presents the difficulty that the means of production of Department 1, in whose bodily form the 2000V plus S exist, are to be exchanged to the full value of 2000, for an equivalent in articles of consumption, 2, while on the other hand the 2000 Department 2 constant capital of articles of consumption cannot be exchanged at their full value for means of production department 1 1000V plus 1000S, because an aliquot part of their value, equal to the wear and tear or the value depreciation of the fixed capital that is to be replaced, must first be precipitated in the form of money that will not function any more as a medium of circulation during the current period of annual reproduction, which alone we are examining. But the money paying for this element of wear and tear, incorporated in the commodity value 2000 of Department 2 Constant Capital, can come only from Department 1, since Department 2 cannot pay for itself, but effects payment precisely by selling its goods. And since, presumably, Department 1 V plus S buys the whole of the commodities, 2000 of Department 2 Constant Capital. Hence, Department 1 must, by means of this purchase, convert that wear and tear into money for Department 2. But according to the law previously evolved, money advanced to the circulation returns to the capitalist producer, who later on throws an equal amount of commodities into circulation. It is evident that in buying Department 2 Constant Capital, Department 1 cannot give Department 2 commodities worth 2,000, and a surplus amount of money on top of that once and for all, without any return of the same by way of the operation of exchange. Otherwise, Department 1 would buy the commodity mass of Department 2 above its value. If Department 2 actually exchanges its 2,000 constant capital for Department 1 1,000V plus 1,000S, it has no further claims on Department 1, and the money circulating in this exchange returns to either 1 or 2, depending on which of them threw it into circulation, that is, which of them acted first as buyer. At the same time, Department 2 would have reconverted the entire value of its commodity capital into the bodily form of means of production, while our assumption is that after its sale, it would not reconvert an aliquot portion of it during the current period of annual reproduction from money into the bodily form of fixed components of its constant capital. A money balance in favour of Department 2 could arise only if it sold 2,000 worth to Department 1 and bought less than 2,000 from Department 1, say only 1,800. In that case, Department 1 would have to make good the debit balance by 200 in money, which would not flow back to it, because it would not have withdrawn from circulation the money it had advanced to it by throwing into it commodities equal to 200. In such an event, we would have a money fund for Department 2 placed to the credit of the wear and tear of its fixed capital. But then we would have an overproduction of means of production in the amount of 200 on the other side, the side of Department 1, and the basis of our scheme would be destroyed, namely reproduction on the same scale, where complete proportionality between the various systems of production is assumed. We would only have done away with one difficulty in order to create another one, much worse. As this problem offers peculiar difficulties, and has hitherto not been treated at all by the political economists, we shall examine seriatim, point by point, all possible, at least seemingly possible, solutions, or rather formulations of the problem. In the first place, we have just assumed that Department 2 sells commodities of the value of 2,000 to Department 1, but buys from it only 1,800 worth. The commodity value 2,000 of Department 2 contains 200 for replacement of wear and tear, which must be stored up in the form of money. The value of 2,000 Department 2C would thus be divided into 1,800, to be exchanged for means of production 1, and 200 to replace wear and tear, which are to be kept in the form of money, after the sale of the 2000C to Department 1. Expressed in terms of value, 2000 Department 2C equals 1800C plus 200D, where D stands for déchet, or wear and tear. We would then have to study the exchange Department 1, 1000V plus 1000S, for Department 2, 1800C, plus 200D. Department 1 buys with £1,000, which has gone to the labourers in wages for their labour power, 1000 Department 2C of articles of consumption. Department 2 buys with the same £1,000 means of production, 1000 of Department 1V. Capitalists 1 thus recover their variable capital in the form of money, and can employ it next year in the purchase of labour power to the same amount. That is, they can replace the variable portion of their productive capital in kind. Furthermore, Department 2 buys with advanced £400 means of production Department 1S, and Department 1S buys with the same £400 articles of consumption 2C. The £400 advanced to the circulation by the capitalists of Department 2 have thus returned to them, but only as an equivalent for sold commodities. Department 1 now buys articles of consumption for advanced £400. Department 2 buys from 1 £400 worth of means of production, whereupon these £400 flow back to Department 1. So far, then, the account is as follows. Department 1 throws into circulation 1000V plus 800S in commodities. It furthermore throws into circulation in money £1,000 in wages and £400 for exchange with Department 2. After the exchange has been made, Department 1 has 1000V in money, 800S exchanged for 800 2C, articles of consumption, and £400 in money. Department 2 throws into circulation 1800C in commodities, articles of consumption, and £400 in money. On the completion of the exchange, it has 1800 in commodities 1, means of production, and £400 in money. There still remain, on the side of Department 1, 200S in means of production, and on the side of Department 2, 200D in articles of consumption. According to our assumption, Department 1 buys with £200 the articles of consumption D of the value of 200. But Department 2 holds on to these £200, since 200D represent wear and tear, and are not to be immediately reconverted into means of production. Therefore, 200 Department 1S cannot be sold. 1/5 of the surplus value 1 to be replaced cannot be realized or converted from its bodily form of means of production into that of articles of consumption. This not only contradicts our assumption of reproduction on a simple scale, it is by itself not a hypothesis which would explain the transformation of 200D into money. It means, rather, that it cannot be explained. Since it cannot be demonstrated in what manner 200D can be converted into money, it is assumed that Department 1 is obliging enough to do the conversion just because it is not able to convert its own remainder of 200S into money. To conceive this as a normal operation of the exchange mechanism is tantamount to the notion that £200 fall every year from the clouds in order regularly to convert 200D into money. But the absurdity of such a hypothesis does not strike one at once if Department 1S, instead of appearing as it does in this case in its primitive mode of existence, namely as a component part of the value of means of production, hence as a component part of the value of commodities which their capitalist producers must convert into money by sale, appears in the hands of the partners of the capitalists, for instance, as ground rent in the hands of landowners, or as interest in the bands of moneylenders. But if that portion of the surplus value of commodities which the industrial capitalist has to yield as ground rent or interest to other co-owners of the surplus value cannot be realized for a long time by the sale of the commodities, then there is also an end to the payment of rent and interest, and the landowners or recipients of interest cannot therefore serve as Dei ex machina, gods from the machine, to convert at pleasure definite portions of the annual reproduction into money by spending rent and interest. The same is true of the expenditures of all so-called unproductive labourers, government officials, physicians, lawyers, etc., and others who, as members of the general public, serve the political economists by explaining what they left unexplained. Nor does it improve matters if instead of direct exchange between Departments 1 and 2, between the two major departments of capitalist producers, the merchant is drawn in as a mediator and helps to overcome all difficulties with his money. In the present case, for instance, 200 of Department 1S must be definitively disposed of to the industrial capitalists of Department 2. It may pass through the hands of a number of merchants, but the last of them will find himself, according to the hypothesis, in the same predicament vis-à-vis Department 2, in which the capitalist producers of Department 1 were at the outset. That is, they cannot sell the 200 Department 1S to Department 2. And this stalled purchase sum cannot renew the same process with Department 1. We see here that, aside from our real purpose, it is absolutely necessary to view the process of reproduction in its basic form, in which obscuring minor circumstances have been eliminated, in order to get rid of the false subterfuges which furnished the semblance of scientific analysis when the process of social reproduction is immediately made the subject of the analysis in its complicated, concrete form. The law that when reproduction proceeds normally, whether it be on a simple or on an extended scale, the money advanced by the capitalist producer to the circulation must return to its point of departure, whether the money is his own or borrowed, excludes once and for all the hypothesis that 200 of Department 2D is converted into money by means of money advanced by Department 1. Section 11B. Replacement of fixed capital in kind. Having disposed of the hypothesis thus considered, only such possibilities remain as, besides replacing the wear and tear portion in money, include also the replacement in kind of the wholly defunct fixed capital. We assumed hitherto, A, that £1,000 paid in wages by Department 1 are spent by the labourers for Department 2 to the same amount, that is, that they buy articles of consumption with them. It is merely a statement of fact that these £1,000 are advanced by Department 1 in money. Wages must be paid in money by the respective capitalist producers. This money is then spent by the labourers for articles of consumption, and serves the sellers of the articles of consumption as a medium of circulation in the conversion of their constant capital from commodity capital into productive capital. True, it passes through many channels, shopkeepers, house owners, tax collectors, unproductive labourers such as physicians, etc., who are needed by the labourer himself, and hence it flows only in part directly from the hands of the labourers one into those of capitalist class two. Its flow may be retarded more or less, and the capitalist may therefore require a new money reserve. All this does not come under consideration in this basic form. B. We assume that at one time Department 1 advances another £400 in money for purchases from Department 2, and that this money returns to it, while at some other time Department 2 advances £400 for purchases from Department 1, and likewise recovers this money. This assumption must be made, for it would be arbitrary to presuppose the contrary, that capitalist class of 1 or 2 should one-sidedly advance to the circulation the money necessary for the exchange of their commodities. Since we have shown that one should reject as absurd the hypothesis that Department 1 would throw additional money into the circulation in order to turn 200 2D into money, it would appear that there was left only the seemingly still more absurd hypothesis that Department 2 itself was throwing the money into circulation, by which that constituent portion of the value of its commodities is converted into money which has to compensate the wear and tear of its fixed capital. For instance, that portion of value which is lost by the spinning machine of Mr. X in the process of production reappears as a portion of the value of the yarn. The loss which his spinning machine suffers in value, that is, in wear and tear, on the one hand should accumulate in his hands as money on the other. Now, supposing that X buys £200 worth of cotton from Y, and thus advances to the circulation £200 in money. Y then buys from him £200 worth of yarn, and these £200 now serve X as a fund to compensate the wear and tear of his machine. The thing would simply come down to this, that X, aside from his production, its product, and the sale of this product, keeps £200 to make good to himself the depreciation of his spinning machine, that is, that in addition to losing £200 through the depreciation of his machine, he must also put up another £200 in money every year out of his own pocket, in order to be able, eventually, to buy a new spinning machine. But the absurdity is only apparent. Department 2 consists of capitalists whose fixed capital is in the most diverse stages of its reproduction. In the case of some of them, it has arrived at the stage where it must be entirely replaced in kind. In the case of the others, it is more or less remote from that stage. All the members of the latter group have this in common, that their fixed capital is not actually reproduced, that is not renewed in natura by a new specimen of the same kind, but that its value is successively accumulated in money. The first group is in quite the same, or almost the same, it does not matter here, position as when it started in business, when it came on the market with its money capital, in order to convert it into constant, fixed and circulating, capital on the one hand, and into labour power, into variable capital, on the other. They have once more to advance this money capital to the circulation, that is, the value of constant fixed capital, as well as that of the circulating and variable capital. Hence, if we assume that half of the £400 thrown into circulation by capitalist class of Department 2 for exchange with Department 1 comes from those capitalists of Department 2 who have to renew not only, by means of their commodities, their means of production pertaining to the circulating capital, but also by means of their money, their fixed capital in kind, while the other half of capitalists, too, replaces, in kind, with its money, only the circulating portion of its constant capital, but does not renew in kind its fixed capital, then there is no contradiction in the statement that these returning £400, returning as soon as Department 1 buys articles of consumption for it, are variously distributed among these two sections of Department 2. They return to Department 2, but they do not come back into the same hands, and are distributed variously within this department, passing from one of its sections to another. One section of Department 2 has, besides the part of the means of production covered in the long run by its commodities, converted £200 in money into new elements of fixed capital in kind. As was the case at the start of the business, the money thus spent returns to this section from the circulation only gradually over a number of years as the wear and tear portion of the value of the commodities to be produced by this fixed capital. The other section of Department 2, however, did not get any commodities from Department 1 for £200. But Department 1 pays it with the money which the first section of Department 2 spent for elements of its fixed capital. The first section of Department 2 has its fixed capital value once more, in renewed bodily form, while the second section is still engaged in accumulating it in money form for the subsequent replacement of its fixed capital in kind. The basis on which we now have to proceed, after the previous exchanges, is the remainder of the commodities still to be exchanged by both sides. 400s on the part of Department 1, and 400 constant on the part of Department 2. Footnote. These figures again do not coincide with those previously assumed, but this is immaterial, since it is merely a question of proportions. Friedrich Engels, end of footnote. We assume that Department 2 advances 400 in money for the exchange of these commodities amounting to 800. One half of the 400, equal to 200, must be laid out under all circumstances by that section of Department 2C, which has accumulated 200 in money as the wear and tear value, and which has to reconvert this money into the bodily form of its fixed capital. Just as constant capital value, variable capital value, and surplus value, into which the value of commodity capital 2 as well as 1 is divisible, may be represented by special proportional shares of commodities 2 and 1 respectively, so may, within the value of the constant capital itself, that portion of the value which is not yet to be converted into the bodily form of the fixed capital, but is rather to be accumulated for the time being in the form of money. A certain quantity of commodities 2, in the present case therefore one half of the remainder, or 200, is here only a vehicle of this wear and tear value, which has to be precipitated in money by means of exchange. The first section of capitalists 2, which renews fixed capital in kind, may already have realized in this way, with the wear and tear part of the mass of commodities of which here only the rest still figures, a part of its wear and tear value, but it still has to realize 200 in money. As for the second half, equal to 200 of the £400 thrown into circulation by Department 2 in this final operation, it buys circulating components of the constant capital from Department 1. A portion of these £200 may be thrown into circulation by both sections of Department 2, or only by the one which does not renew its fixed component of value in kind. With these £400 there is thus extracted from Department 1, 1. Commodities amounting to £200, consisting only of elements of fixed capital. 2. Commodities amounting to £200, replacing only natural elements of the circulating portion of the constant capital of Department 2. So 1 has sold its entire annual product, so far as it is to be sold, to Department 2. But the value of 1/5 of it, £400, is now held by Department 1 in the form of money. This money, however, is surplus value, converted into money which must be spent as revenue for articles of consumption. Thus Department 1 buys with its £400 Department 2's entire commodity value equal to £400. Hence this money flows back to Department 2 by setting its commodities in motion. We shall now suppose 3 cases in which we shall call the section of capitalists 2, which replaces its fixed capital in kind, section 1. And that section which stores up depreciation value from fixed capital in money form, section 2. The 3 cases are the following. A. That a share of the 400 still existing with Department 2 as a remnant in the shape of commodities must replace certain shares of the circulating parts of the constant capital for sections 1 and 2, say, 1/2 for each. B. That section 1 has already sold all its commodities, while section 2 still has to sell 400. C. That section 2 has sold all but the 200, which are the bearers of the depreciation value. Then we have the following distributions. A. Of the commodity value 400C, still in the hands of Department 2, Section 1 holds 100, and Section 2, 300. 200 out of the 300 represent depreciation. In that case, Section 1 originally laid out 300 of the £400 in money now returned by Department 1 to get commodities from Department 2, namely 200 in money, for which it secured elements of fixed capital in kind from Department 1, and 100 in money for the promotion of its exchange of commodities with Department 1. Section 2, on the other hand, advanced only a quarter of the 400, that is, 100, likewise for the promotion of its commodity exchange with Department 1. Section 1, then, advanced 300, and Section 2, 100, of the 400 in money. Of these 400, their return, however, to Section 1, 100, that is, only 1/3 of the money advanced by it. But it has, in place of the other 2/3, a renewed fixed capital to the value of 200. Section 1 has given money to Department 1 for this element of fixed capital to the value of 200, but no subsequent commodities. So far as the 200 in money are concerned, Section 1 confronts Department 1 only as buyer, but not later on as seller. This money cannot therefore return to Section 1, otherwise it would have received the elements of fixed capital from Department 1 as a gift. With reference to the last third of the money advanced by it, Section 1 first acted as a buyer of circulating constituent parts of its constant capital. With the same money, Department 1 buys from it the remainder of its commodities worth 100. This money, then, flows back to it, Section 1 of Department 2, because it acts as a vendor of commodities directly after having acted as a buyer. If this money did not return, then Department 2, Section 1, would have given to Department 1, for commodities amounting to 100, first 100 in money, and then into the bargain 100 in commodities. That is, Department 2 would have given away its commodities to Department 1 as a present. On the other hand, Section 2, which laid out 100 in money, receives back 300 in money. 100 because first as a buyer it threw 100 in money into circulation and receives them back as a seller. 200 because it functions only as a seller of commodities to that amount, but not as a buyer. Hence the money cannot flow back to Department 1. The fixed capital depreciation is thus balanced by the money thrown into circulation by Department 2, Section 1, in the purchase of elements of fixed capital. But it reaches the hands of Section 2 not as money of Section 1, but as money belonging to Department 1. B. On this assumption, the remainder of Department 2 is so distributed that Section 1 has 200 in money, and Section 2 has 400 in commodities. Section 1 has sold all of its commodities, but 200 in money are a transformed shape of the fixed component part of its constant capital, which it has to renew in kind. Hence, it acts here only as a buyer, and receives, instead of its money, commodity 1 to the same value in natural elements of its fixed capital. Section 2 has to throw only £200 into circulation as a maximum if Department 1 does not advance any money for commodity exchange between Departments 1 and 2, since for half of its commodity value it is only a seller to Department 1, not a buyer from Department 1. The return to Section 2 from the circulation, £400. £200 because it has advanced them as a buyer and receives them back as a seller of 200 in commodities. 200 because it sells commodities to the value of 200 to Department 1 without obtaining an equivalent in commodities from Department 1. C. Section 1 has 200 in money and 200 in commodities. Section 2 has 200D in commodities. On this supposition, Section 2 does not have any advance to make in money, because, vis-à-vis Department 1, it no longer acts at all as a buyer, but only as a seller, hence has to wait until someone buys from it. Section 1 advances £400 in money. 200 for mutual commodity exchange with Department 1, 200 as mere buyer from Department 1. With the last £200 in money, it purchases the elements of fixed capital. With £200 in money, Department 1 buys from Section 1 commodities for 200, so that the latter thus recovers the £200 in money it had advanced for this commodity exchange. And Department 1 buys with the other £200, which it has likewise received from Section 1, commodities to the value of 200 from Section 2, whereby the latter's wear and tear of fixed capital is precipitated in the form of money. The matter is not altered in the least, if it is assumed that, in case C, Department 1 instead of Department 2, Section 1, advances the 200 in money to promote the exchange of the existing commodities. If Department 1 buys, in that event, first 200 in commodities from Department 2, Section 2, on the assumption that this section has only this commodity remnant left to sell, then the £200 do not return to Department 1, since Department 2, Section 2, does not act again as a buyer. But Department 2, Section 1, has, in that case, £200 in money to spend in buying, and 200 in commodities for exchange purposes, thus making a total of 400 for trading with Department 1. £200 in money then return to Department 1 from Department 2, Section 1. If Department 1 again lays them out in the purchase of 200 in commodities from Department 2, Section 1, they return to Department 1 as soon as Department 2, Section 1 takes the second half of the 400 in commodities off Department 1's hands. Section 1 of Department 2 has spent £200 in money as a mere buyer of elements of fixed capital. They therefore do not return to it, but serve to turn the 200C, the commodity remnant of Department 2, Section 2, into money, while the £200, the money laid out by Department 1 for the exchange of commodities, return to Department 1 via Department 2, Section 1, not via Department 2, Section 2. In the place of its commodities of 400, there has returned to it a commodity equivalent amounting to 400. The £200 in money advanced by it for the exchange of 800 in commodities have likewise returned to it. Everything is therefore all right. The difficulty encountered in the exchange between Department 1, 1000 V plus 1000 S and 2000 C of Department 2 has been reduced to the difficulty on exchanging remainders between 400 S of Department 1 and 200 in money of Department 2, Section 1 plus 200 C in commodities plus 200 C in commodities of Section 2. Or, to make the matter still clearer, Department 1, 200S plus 200S, against Department 2, 200 in money of Section 1, plus 200C in commodities, plus 200C in commodities of Section 2. Since in Department 2, Section 1, 200C in commodities are exchanged for 200S in commodities of Department 1, and since all the money circulating in this exchange of 400 in commodities between 1 and 2 returns to him who advanced it, 1 or 2, this money, being an element of the exchange between 1 and 2, is actually not an element of the problem which is troubling us here. Or, to present it differently, supposing in the exchange between 200S in commodities of Department 1 and 200C in commodities of Department 2, Section 1, the money functions as a means of payment, not as a means of purchase, and therefore also not as a medium of circulation, in the strictest sense of the words. It is then clear, since the commodities 200 of Department 1S and 200 of Department 2C, Section 1, are equal in magnitude of value, that means of production worth 200 are exchanged for articles of consumption worth 200, that money functions here only ideally, and that neither side really has to throw any money into the circulation for the payment of any balance. Hence the problem presents itself in its pure form only when we strike off on both sides, Departments 1 and 2, the commodities 200 of Department 1S, and their equivalent, the 200, in commodities of Department 2C, Section 1. After the elimination of these two amounts of commodities of equal value, Departments 1 and 2, which balance each other, there is left, for exchange, a remainder in which the problem evinces its pure form, namely, Department 1, 200S in commodities, Department 2, Section 1, 200C in money, plus Section 2, 200C in commodities. It is evident here that Department 1, Section 1, buys with 200 in money the component parts of its fixed capital 201S. The fixed capital of Department 2, Section 1 is thereby renewed in kind, and the surplus value of Department 1, worth 200, is converted from the commodity form, means of production, or, more precisely, elements of fixed capital, into the money form. With this money, Department 1 buys articles of consumption from Department 2, Section 2, and the result for Department 2 is that for Section 1, a fixed component part of its constant capital has been renewed in kind, and that for Section 2, another component part, which compensates for the depreciation of its fixed capital, has been precipitated in money form. And this continues every year until this last component part also has to be renewed in kind. The condition precedent is here evidently that this fixed component part of constant capital 2, which is reconverted into money to the full extent of its value, and therefore must be renewed in kind each year, section 1, should be equal to the annual depreciation of the other fixed component part of constant capital 2, which continues to function in its old bodily form, and whose wear and tear, depreciation in value, which it transfers to the commodities in whose production it is engaged, is first to be compensated in money. Such a balance would seem to be a law of reproduction on the same scale. This is equivalent to saying that in Department 1, which puts out the means of production, the proportional division of labour must remain unchanged, since it produces on the one hand circulating, and on the other fixed component parts of the constant capital of Department 2. Before we analyse this more closely, we must see what turn the matter takes if the remainder of Department 2C Section 1 is not equal to the remainder of Department 2C Section 2, and may be larger or smaller. Let us study the two cases one after the other. First case, Department 1, 200S. Department 2, Section 1, 220C in money, plus Section 2, 200C in commodities. In this case, Department 2C, Section 1, buys with £200 in money the commodities 200 of Department 1S, and Department 1 buys with the same money the commodities 200 of Department 2C, Section 2. That is, that portion of the fixed capital which is to be precipitated in money. This portion is thus converted into money. But 20 of Department 2C, Section 1, in money, cannot be reconverted into fixed capital in kind. It seems this misfortune can be remedied by setting the remainder of Department 1S at 220 instead of at 200, so that only 1,780 instead of 1,800 of the 2,000 Department 1 would be disposed of by former exchange. We should then have Department 1, 220S, Department 2, Section 1, 220C in money, plus Section 2, 200C in commodities. Department 2C, Section 1, buys with £220 in money the 220 of Department 1S, and Department 1 buys then with £200 the 200 of Department 2C, Section 2 in commodities. But now £20 in money remain on the side of Department 1, a portion of surplus value which it can hold on to only in the form of money, without being able to spend it for articles of consumption. The difficulty is thus merely transferred from Department 2C, Section 1 to Department 1S. Let us now assume, on the other hand, that Department 2C, Section 1 is smaller than Department 2C, Section 2. Then we have the second case. Department 1, 200S in commodities, Department 2, Section 1, 180C in money, plus Section 2, 200C in commodities. With £180 in money, Department 2, Section 1, buys commodities 180 of Department 1S. With this money, Department 1 buys commodities of the same value from Department 2, Section 2. Hence, 180 of Department 2C, Section 2. There remain 20 of Department 1S unsaleable on one side, and also 20 of Department 2C, Section 2 on the other. Commodities worth 40, not convertible into money. It would not help us to make the remainder of Department 1 equal to 180. True, no surplus would then be left in Section 1, but now, as before, a surplus of 20 would remain in Department 2C, Section 2, unsaleable, inconvertible into money. In the first case, where Department 2, Section 1 is greater than Department 2, Section 2, there remains on the side of Department 2C, Section 1, a surplus in money form not reconvertible into fixed capital. Or if the remainder of Department 1S is assumed to be equal to Department 2C, Section 1, there remains on the side of Department 1S the same surplus in money form, not convertible into articles of consumption. In the second case, where Department 2C, Section 1 is smaller than Department 2C, Section 2, there remains a money deficit on the side of 200 of Department 1S and Department 2C, Section 2, and an equal surplus of commodities on both sides. Or, if the remainder of Department 1S is assumed to be equal to Department 2C, Section 1, there remains a money deficit and a surplus of commodities on the side of Department 2C, Section 2. If we assume the remainders of Department 1 always to be equal to Department 2C, Section 1, since production is determined by orders and reproduction is not altered in any way, if one year there is a greater output of fixed component parts and the next a greater output of circulating component parts of constant capitals 2 and 1, then in the first case, Department 1S can be reconverted into articles of consumption only if Department 1 buys with it a portion of the surplus value of 2, and Department 2 accumulates it in money instead of consuming it. And in the second case, matters can be remedied only if Department 1 spends the money itself, an assumption we have already rejected. If Department 2C, Section 1 is greater than Department 2C, Section 2, foreign commodities must be imported to realize the money surplus in Department 1S. If, conversely, Department 2C, Section 1 is smaller than Department 2C, Section 2, commodities 2, articles of consumption, will have to be exported to realize the depreciation part of Department 2C in means of production. Consequently, in either case, foreign trade is necessary. Even granted that for a study of reproduction on an unchanging scale, it is to be supposed that the productivity of all lines of industry, hence also the proportional value relations of their commodities, remain constant, the two last-named cases, in which Department 2C, Section 1 is either greater or smaller than Department 2C, Section 2, will nevertheless always be of interest for production on an enlarged scale, where these cases may infallibly be encountered. Results. The following is to be noted with reference to replacement of fixed capital. If, all other things, and not only the scale of production, but above all the productivity of labour remaining the same, a greater part of the fixed element of constant capital 2 expires than did the year before, and hence a greater part must be renewed in kind, then that part of the fixed capital, which is as yet only on the way to its demise, and is to be replaced meanwhile in money until its day of expiry, must shrink in the same proportion, inasmuch as it was assumed that the sum, and the sum of the value, of the fixed part of capital functioning in Department 2 remains the same. This, however, brings with it the following circumstances. First, if the greater part of commodity capital 1 consists of elements of the fixed capital of constant capital 2, then a correspondingly smaller portion consists of circulating component parts of constant capital 2, because the total production of department 1 for department 2C remains unchanged. If one of these parts increases, the other decreases, and vice versa. On the other hand, the total production of Department 2 also retains the same volume. But how is this possible if its raw materials, semi-finished products and auxiliary materials, that is, the circulating elements of constant capital 2, decrease? Second, the greater part of fixed capital 2C, restored in its money form, flows to Department 1 to be reconverted from its money form into its bodily form. So there is a greater flow of money to Department 1, aside from the money circulating between Departments 1 and 2, merely for the exchange of their commodities. More money which is not instrumental in effecting mutual commodity exchange, but acts only one-sidedly in the function of a means of purchase. But then the mass of commodities of Department 2C, which is the bearer of the wear-and-tear equivalent, and thus the mass of commodities 2 that must only be exchanged for money 1 and not for commodities 1, would also shrink proportionately. More money would have flown from Department 2 to 1 as mere means of purchase, and there would be fewer commodities 2 in relation to which Department 1 would have to function as a mere buyer. A greater portion of Department 1S, for Department 1V is already converted into Commodities 2, would not therefore be convertible into Commodities 2, but would persist in the form of money. The opposite case, in which the reproduction of demises of fixed capital 2 in a certain year is less, and on the contrary, the depreciation part greater, needs no further discussion. There would be a crisis of overproduction, in spite of reproduction on an unchanging scale. In short, if under simple reproduction and other unchanged conditions, particularly under unchanged productive power, total volume and intensity of labour, no constant proportion is assumed between expiring fixed capital, to be renewed, and fixed capital still continuing to function in its old bodily form, merely adding to the product's value in compensation of its depreciation. Then, in the one case, the mass of circulating component parts to be reproduced would remain the same, while the mass of fixed component parts to be reproduced would be increased. Therefore, the total production of Department 1 would have to grow, or, even aside from money relations, there would be a deficit in reproduction. In the other case, if the size of fixed capital 2 to be reproduced in kind should proportionately decrease, and hence the component part of fixed capital 2, which must now be replaced only in money, should increase in the same ratio, then the quantity of the circulating component parts of constant capital 2 reproduced by Department 1 would remain unchanged, while that of the fixed component parts to be reproduced would decrease. Hence, either decrease in aggregate production of Department 1, or surplus, as previously deficit, and surplus that is not to be converted into money. True, the same labour can, in the first case, turn out a greater product through increasing productivity, extension or intensity, and the deficit could thus be covered in that case. But such a change would not take place without a shifting of capital and labour from one line of production of Department 1 to another, and every such shift would call forth momentary disturbances. Furthermore, insofar as extension and intensification of labour would mount, Department 1 would have, for exchange, more of its own value for less of Department 2's value, Hence there would be a depreciation of the product of Department 1. The reverse would take place in the second case, where Department 1 must curtail its production, which implies a crisis for its labourers and capitalists, or produce a surplus, which again spells crisis. Such surplus is not an evil in itself, but an advantage. However, it is an evil under capitalist production. Foreign trade could help out in either case. In the first case, in order to convert commodities, one, held in the form of money, into articles of consumption, and in the second case, to dispose of the commodity surplus. But since foreign trade does not merely replace certain elements, also with regard to value, it only transfers the contradictions to a wider sphere and gives them greater latitude. Once the capitalist form of reproduction is abolished, it is only a matter of the volume of the expiring portion, expiring and therefore to be reproduced in kind, of fixed capital, the capital, which in our illustration functions in the production of articles of consumption, varying in various successive years. If it is very large in a certain year, in excess of the average mortality, as is the case with human beings, then it is certainly so much smaller in the next year. The quantity of raw materials, semi-finished products and auxiliary materials required for the annual production of the articles of consumption, provided other things remain equal, does not decrease in consequence. Hence the aggregate production of means of production would have to increase in the one case and decrease in the other. This can be remedied only by a continuous relative overproduction. There must be, on the one hand, a certain quantity of fixed capital produced in excess of that which is directly required. On the other hand, and particularly, there must be a supply of raw materials, etc., in excess of the direct annual requirements. This applies especially to means of subsistence. This sort of overproduction is tantamount to control by society over the material means of its own reproduction. But within capitalist society, it is an element of anarchy. This illustration of fixed capital, on the basis of an unchanged scale of reproduction, is striking. A disproportion of the production of fixed and circulating capital is one of the favourite arguments of the economists in explaining crises. That such a disproportion can and must arise even when the fixed capital is merely preserved, that it can and must do so on the assumption of ideal normal production on the basis of simple reproduction of the already functioning social capital, is something new to them.